Hey, everybody. How's it going? Welcome to another episode of Halifax is Burning, the campus and community radio show where you're going to hear the best in Atlantic Canadian music. If you're a regular listener to the show, you may notice I've got what I'm calling an NPR voice on the go tonight. A little worse for wear in the throat area, but we're going to get through this. And we've got a great show for you tonight. On the show, we'll hear from a new expat act called Vanishing Hand, and we'll bring you a throwback track from one of my all-time favorite records. And then in about 15 minutes, Joel Plaskett stops by the studio with his father, Bill. They're going to talk about their brand new collaborative album, called Solidarity. Always a very big treat to have Joel come by the show for a chat. Before we get to all that, though, tonight I have a plea to make. You may be quite familiar with Funding Drive, our annual effort to raise money for our station, CKDU 88.1 FM. This year, we've flipped the script on that model and have launched what we're calling a sustainer program. So instead of asking you for a one-time annual donation, we've made it easier for you to support CKDU 88.1 FM with smaller monthly donations throughout the whole year. You can become a sustainer for as little as $3 a month, and all the money we collect helps us continue to bring you quality campus and community radio programming that offers an alternative to everything else on your radio dial. You can sign up to become a sustainer at www.ckdu.ca. You can do that right now, and I highly encourage it. Plus, I'm offering up a very special bonus. If you sign up this week and specifically mention that you're a fan of Halifax is Burning, I'll put together a very special mixtape just for you. So go to your computer right now, your phone, whatever device of choice you choose. Sign up at www.ckdu.ca. Become a CKDU sustainer. Your help is greatly appreciated, both by the folks who run this station, but also by the people who listen to this station and the people who volunteer their time here, because this is all volunteer work for a lot of us, and we need your help. So become a CKDU sustainer. I'll say it one more time. It's at ckdu.ca, and mention that you're a big fan of Halifax is Burning, and we'll get you something a little bit special. Okay? Okay, let's jump in headfirst to the show, shall we? We always like to champion local successes on Halifax is Burning, and Walrus is a band who has long been on our radar. This week we learned that Walrus will be one of a handful of acts playing Field Trip, an outdoor festival in Toronto curated by the legendary Canadian label Arts and Crafts. And if that wasn't enough, the band released a new single to coincide with the announcement this week. So here to kick us off tonight is something brand new from Walrus. This is a song called Regular Face. And maybe you're hearing it here first on Halifax is Burning, because that's how we do things on CKDU. Here's something brand new from Walrus.
Thank you. And now for something completely different.
That's a brand new band based in Toronto, Ontario, but comprised of two Nova Scotian expats by the name of Michael Bigelow and Jim McAlpine. Of course, Jim McAlpine, a member of one of my favorite bands called Vikings. He was also a member of North of America and The Holy Shroud, a band that Mike Bigelow also played in. Bigelow, you also may remember from formative days in a band called Winter Sleep. And he was also the bass player in one of my all-time favorite Halifax bands, which brings us to this week's throwback track. Throwback track is where we dig into the archives and bring you something old, presented as if it's something new. It's a little weird to be playing this song with Joel sitting right here watching me, but we're going to hear a song right now from Contrived, from their debut album, Pursuit of Plots, recorded at the top of the Khyber Club in downtown Halifax, Nova Scotia. This is something short and sweet, one of the best bands I've ever seen. Contrived, get to your stations on Halifax is Burning. From the album Solidarity, that's Bill and Joel Plaskett with a track called The Next Blue Sky, and I'm very excited and very humbled to have both Bill and Joel in the studio tonight here with us. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks, Trevor.
You're welcome.
thanks. Well, this is an interesting project. I must say, whenever I see sibling or family-related musical endeavors, it's the furthest thing from my own experience. I cannot imagine playing music with my family or my siblings. So obviously not an issue that the Plaskets deal with.
Well, no, I guess not. No, I mean, my sister, too, Anna, plays music.
That's right. Yeah.
She hasn't joined the band yet, but she's...
We don't have a traditional family band, you know, where Dad played the fiddle and everybody step dances.
Right, yes,
like that,
yeah.
You know, but...
We were just working
on. We played together quite a bit from time.
And I was just
time.
Working on some recording with Anna. She's working on some children's music.
Oh, cool!
She's a music therapist, and so that was fun too. So yeah, we got a lot going on.
Yeah. Well, music is something that has always been in your house, I assume.
Yeah.
And Bill, you've been playing since you've come to Canada.
I've been playing, you know, since the kids were young and before, you know, and you know, over the years, I've. Particularly when we lived down in Lunenburg County in the early days when Joel and Anna were both young. I had lots of musical friends, you know, banjo players, fiddlers, accordion players and stuff, you know, big sing-ups. And I was in a band called Starboard Side for a while, which was a couple of brothers from Canso area and a fiddler from Lunenburg County and a singer from Lunenburg. You know, we did like fishing songs and maritime stuff, you know. And yeah, so
great.
Yeah, and I mean, I can remember that was definitely part of growing up. I didn't play anything when I was young, really. I tried drums briefly, and then like saxophone for a short-lived.
eight months. A different career that could have been.
And then really just when we moved to Halifax, picked up the guitar, asked Dad to teach me some guitar because that's when I met Rob and Ian, who I went on to be in Thrush Hermit with.
Mm-hmm.
Rob had just gotten a guitar or something, and I thought, oh, well, if I learn guitar, then we can start a band. You know, it was kind of like we were all getting into music. I mean, I'd grown up around music, but that really the desire to play wasn't so much to join the family band. It was to it was to have something to do with these guys that I just met and, you know, and sort of basically a way to kind of identify as an adolescent. And then it sort of merged into us.
Well, I mean, that was the way it was for me at that age, too, when
right.
I was growing up in England. You know, I started off playing skiffle music
right.
with friends at school and traditional New Orleans jazz and stuff. I was a banjo player in those days. My father played the tenor banjo.
Oh, wow.
And I learned that from him, you know. And then that kind of morphed into a... school days, Cliff Richard and the Shadows kind of
didn't you,
band.
You I know, love like the story where
early '60s band.
I know? Love the story where you played the Hammersmith Palais or whatever, right? And,
oh,
and plugged into the floor, right? You plugged well, the bass yeah, well, into the floor.
The drummer
right
in the band,
PA.
The drummer, his older sister used to work for Kangol, you know, who made crash helmets and mm-hmm. berets and stuff. And they one year they sponsored the what they called the National Jive Contest, and because of Rog Woolley's sister's connection, you know, we got the gig to like play,
right?
And so we showed up there. We didn't have a van or anything. We had to travel across London on the Underground with our sort of cheesy little amps and stuff, you know. But we got there, and when we got there, the deal was that we would plug into the house system, which was on a revolving stage, you know.
Oh.
So we all just set up in a line on the back of the stage, and when the time came, it kind of swung us around, you know, into this dance hall.
Swinging 60s.
Yeah.
And then the sound system kind of malfunctioned, yeah. You know. And there was all these big splattering sounds and stuff. It was a big failure, you know.
I still like the story.
Yeah, it's a good, great. So what, you know, obviously, you know, you come through, you were describing this period of you learning how to play Joel and figuring out how to be in a band and play in a band. Bill, at that time, when you're kind of watching from the periphery as a musician, what's that feeling like to watch your son, you know, pick it up and start doing the things that you've always been doing?
Well, I mean, I was pleased to observe it, you know, and also in the early days, I had a kind of active role because when they got a gig or something, you know, they'd go to the Silver Bullet or something
like
that.
No, the Pub Flamingo.
Yeah. And the Pub Flamingo, and all, yeah. They were all underage, you know.
Uh-huh.
We had to have... And
you were the band dad.
Yeah. I was the band dad.
The band dad.
We had to have a parent with us at all times to get into those bars.
So I got to see the evolution kind of firsthand, you know.
Right.
And I remember you
the
went
cacophony
to, you went to that, that Summer Rock. Remember that Summer
Rock
camp?
Yeah, and then we were in the rock camp for a year or two there.
And there was that thing you did with the band that you put together where there was all these, there was that smoke. And
oh,
all,
yeah,
and
yeah.
What
well,
did,
yeah.
What was our Soldiers of Rock.
Soldiers of Rock. Ivor Jones was our guitar coach at the time, and Phil was in it with me, Phil's worked with Huey. And we wrote this. We did
and
Dirty
Deeds.
We did Dirty Deeds to Underachieve by AC/DC, and then wrote this original. Ivor sort of wrote this original that we all learned with guitar harmonies, kind of like a Metallica type song called Soldiers of Rock. And we'd like march, and then there would be this like explode. There was pyro. It was awesome. Actually,
yeah, it was great. Yeah.
I don't think I've had a show with that much production since.
Yeah.
But
well, and you mentioned like Ivor, he get you to do finger exercises during the day to strengthen your fingers.
He was, he was responsible for like any early chops that I had came from. had a lot to do with Summer Rock 1980 something, 8 or 9,
whatever it was.
Yeah. The legacy continues.
Yeah,
yeah.
Luckily enough, it hasn't ended up on YouTube yet. But maybe it. Actually, I better watch what I say. Maybe it
was
is out
a video
there.
Of it.
Yeah, but yeah. Was, but I mean, you know, we played a lot there. The Hermit got going in, I guess, with local gigs about 91 or 2, just in the sort of last 2 years of high school, we started gigging out downtown and played it. Our first show was in the lobby of the Casino Theater, and then we did we played the Pub Flamingo. They had these Two Buck Tuesdays, which that's now the Pacifico location, right? But that was a really great bar to play, and they'd have an all-ages show from like 7 to 9, and then from 9 to 11 you'd play the bar show, and so we'd do both sets, but dad would have to be there for the second half, and we broke the record for the Two Buck Tuesday first show, the first gig we did there, because we just got all our friends to come. We postered the hell out of the city and sort of started running, and the Sloan guys were really active at that time and started helping us out, and so kind of rolled it away from there.
Yeah, interesting times.
It was.
Yeah, there's a lot. You
exciting
know,
times, yeah.
Here in Halifax right now, we're talking a lot about, or there's, you know, a smattering of conversations that happen about sort of the changes in the music scene and whether, you know, we're talking about venues closing or how difficult it is even to do an all-ages show in this province.
Absolutely.
Now.
Yeah.
I wonder, both of you come from, you know, you have a wealth of experience observing this city. Does it feel different now when you're looking at it?
I don't know as much of what's happening on the ground as I necessarily should. You know, I mean, I still feel connected to the scene, but much of my time is spent away. I'm now a parent and I'm not out as much at as many shows. I want to get out to shows. I have the intention to, but the reality is it's just not that easy. And, you know, with the bridge closure yeah, being in Dartmouth and everything and the ferry stopping a lot, Halifax has always been a late town, right?
Yes.
And so that becomes a little bit of a challenge. But having said that, I don't think it's an easy time anywhere. For live music, I don't think Halifax is necessarily an anomaly. I think we're competing with Netflix and a totally different climate where you can sort of pretend you're at a place or by just reading about your friends who are there. And so getting people out of the house isn't as easy. And you know, and as rent goes up and the city changes, there's not as many avenues. The all ages has always been a challenge, but there was the Cafe LA back in the day, and the Pavilion, and those were huge for the scene that I came up through, where we had a place to play, and there was a lot of that was a big part of the inclusion of the scene was, and as a result there were a lot of young bands, and I hope and still feel that that's going on, but I wouldn't say it was easy back then, but it doesn't seem any easier now, that's for sure.
So we're here talking about this new album, Solidarity. I think when you're kind of growing up, you're playing music that perhaps is a little bit against the grain when it comes to your roots, and you're looking for different avenues. You're looking for perhaps a rebellious out. At what point was that ever sort of a concept that you had? Like, were you moving away from folk stuff because your dad was into folk stuff, or were you sort of always having that in the back of your mind, and did it like make a comeback for you, you know?
For me, I've always loved a variety of music. As a teenager, I was really, really enamored with punk rock and classic rock. Like Zeppelin blew my mind, as did the Pixies and the Clash and the Sex Pistols.
Big Kiss fan,
and
right?
Kiss, we loved Kiss, you know, makeup, you know, and Metallica too, the early Metallica stuff. You know, that was all something. But the thing was, is even with like Zeppelin, as I got into it, it was like, yeah, immediately start reading about them in Guitar for the Practicing Musician or whatever, and Jimmy Page mentions Burt Jansch, and then I see Burt Jansch records in Dad's record collection, and I start kind of moving back into the Fairport Convention and listen to that stuff, and not fully appreciating it, but getting things out of it, you know, kind of going, oh, that's really cool, I hear that, and not listening to the records in great detail, as much detail as I have now. Like, I've found certain things as I've gotten older make more sense. But even then, kind of finding like inspiration in folk stuff, and growing up around Dad singing songs, that's always been like and lyrics have always been hugely important to me, regardless of the kind of music that I've been playing or listening to.
Yeah,
and so I think that's kind of been the through line, even as I've maybe started to not flirt with, but definitely incorporate a lot more acoustic instrumentation and kind of pushing back into like the folk music that I grew up
with. When you've taken me out to play with you from time to time, and also, I mean, in a way, another watershed moment or something was getting that tenor guitar.
Yeah,
in a way,
yeah,
know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So when we play together as a duo, you know, Joel's usually on the tenor, or I play tenor too, you know, and so we got that weave between those two instruments, which almost inherently has that kind of folky feel to it, you know.
Absolutely. Well, and that was,
I'm a finger picker, and Joel, you know, Joel's moving around in like an open tuning and stuff, so it's got that kind of fluid.
It's kind of lent itself to a sound.
Kind of Irish
that's,
feel
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, that's
you know?
Kind of, like, I kind of feel like it's this mix between, actually sort of, like to think of it as it residing. I mean, we do, you know, we live here, and there's an element of it being like Nova Scotia. But the thing I like about this part of the world in an interesting way, and I kind of feel like the tenor and six when they're played together speak to that, is it's sort of between Ireland and the Appalachians. You know, you can hear country and the modal stuff, and you can hear the British Isles and the Irish history, and we're sort of geographically a little bit between the two as well, and it sort of lends itself to. But it's, I like how, the thing I've been so enjoying about playing music with Dad is his guitar playing. There's a steadiness to it that, in terms of the way, especially the way he finger picks, that like lends itself to this kind of guitar improvisation back and forth between the two of us, which touches down on the Burt Jansch and the John Renborn records and the stuff that, you know, that it was big in your record collection. And I feel like I have developed a pretty deep appreciation for. Never really, I don't know how to do it authentically, but I feel like when we play together that it actually kind of, it sort of it veers into a place where I'm like, wow, it's something that I can't play music like that with anybody else other than with you, Dad. So, yeah. You know.
Is there a song on this record you feel best exemplifies that back and forth?
It's funny because it was a lot of it on three, like with Heartless and stuff. Nothing More to Say when we play those
That's
versions.
Right.
But
yeah.
I'm trying to think on this.
What have we got there?
I mean, Up in the Air's got a bit of that sound. It's that modal open tuning. That might be a good. That's got a. But not so much in the duo.
Well, in
content.
A way, I mean the.
It's funny. Here I'm talking about it. I can't think of a song on the record that has it exactly. But.
Well, I mean. Blank Check.
Blank
got
Check's got that bazooki
it's
rattle.
Got the bazooki, yeah. Kind oh, yeah. of like the bridges and stuff
yeah.
in there.
That's pretty. That's got some modal stuff going on. Yeah, play yeah. Blank Check.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, let's listen
Blank
to
Check.
That one.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite tunes on the record too.
Oh yeah, and why is that?
Well, partly the lyrics themselves with the kind of the story that they've got going on, you know, just
yeah.
listen to it when you hear
yeah,
it,
yeah.
But also just like the dun, 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 you know, like the intro,
the gallop,
the intro, you know,
the gallop, yeah,
and right. just the it kind of gallops along. It's great.
Yeah, great. Know? All right. Well, let's take.
I'm going to introduce every song with dun, dun.
Yeah, yeah.
Here comes.
and then everybody will be like, Are they going to play an Iron Maiden song?
Yeah, exactly.
Is Run to the Hills coming up?
Achilles' Last Day.
Okay. Yeah. Let's listen to this song. This one is called Blank Check from the album Solidarity. We're talking with Bill and Joel Plaskett tonight here on Halifax is Burning.
Don't place the faith in religion or the free market. I'll park it with the freaks and geeks on the periphery, like Jacob down on Portland, and tell you he's a shame. I'm inclined to believe it. Now we need some pocket change. Attention to the pimps and the day traders. Spend my evenings making music in my neighborhood. My heroes live on vinyl, in darkness sales are final, where we sing of love with sadness, cause this modern world is madness. Oh honey, you can't eat money. The paper that they're printed on is brought to you by billionaires. Man, they barely scratch the surface. A portfolio is worthless in a world so full of clowns. Man, you still wanna join the circus? Oh, honey, you can't eat money. You can't buy love with a big blank check. Oh, hey, baby, this world's crazy.
from the album Solidarity. That's Bill and Joel Plaskett with a song called Blank Check, one of Bill's favorites from the record.
Yeah.
Can't buy love with a big blank check.
Right? That's the message.
You can try.
Tell me about, you know, there's been, you have performed together before. Every now and then there'd be some special shows popping up, or Joel would be on the road and would invite Bill along to perform. What brought you to the decision to finally make an album together?
Well, I mean, we've been doing shows on and off over the years. Dad came out on the Three tour and played a bunch on that record, but he's sort of been lending his guitar playing and skills to my tunes. And when we would do these shows where he'd be accompanying me, often maybe Dad would sing a song or something, and because it would be nice to, I mean, I wanted to sort of showcase what he did, but also, but those show songs, A, people didn't know them a lot of the time. It might be a trad song or one of your tunes that wasn't on record, and I was thinking it would be nice to have some material that Dad could play and deliver. Just selfishly, it's nice to be able to take a break from singing and step back and sort of be the accompanist for like 3 or 4 minutes.
Sure.
So there's there's, you know, my own motives to, it's nice to be able to sometimes just watch the audience and watch Dad sing. And so, but, and then beyond that, I think just the desire to make a record that reflected our shared musical terrain. Mm-hmm. And so sort of where we converge, and then sort of, you know, I kind of bring in my rock history and production sort of skills or aesthetic to it to a certain degree, and then Dad bringing in his more traditional element, and then so probably the two extremes are there on the record, I guess, with a song like Jim Jones where Dad plays on his own.
Yeah, that's a great song.
To kind of maybe me pushing it into like some scratchy electric guitars on like Solidarity.
Yeah,
like
I'd really noticed the tone of the guitar on that song.
Yeah,
was pretty cool. Because I think when you you know, if you read about the record, you know, you perhaps assume that it was a little acoustic and you know, it's definitely hitting those vibes and the folk vibes and all those things. But you definitely bring in some production that perhaps you wouldn't expect from a straight up, you know, folk record.
Well, and the thing is when you go back to some of the records that were sort of folk rock, that were definitely an influence on this, like I'm thinking specifically of the Richard and Linda Thompson record, I Want to See the Bright Lights Tonight, which is such an awesome record. And I always go back to that because it just sounds so good. And the way it's presented is really, really cool because they mix acoustic and electric instruments. And Richard Thompson's electric guitar playing is ferocious, and so I like that juxtaposition. I don't feel like you know, so if you kind of know those records, then you can hear it as there's a bit of a nod to it.
When we were in the studio there, I think we dialed up When I Get to the Border, right?
Yeah, and we cranked
and
up that,
and that thing where there's this big mashup of like accordion and mandolin and fiddle and electric guitar, you know. It's fabulous.
Yeah, it's sort of this, there's this juxtaposition of these like traditional instruments playing almost tunes and then like a wind out improvisational guitar solo. I really like that. I love the way that sort of works. And so there was definitely there's some musical referencing going on, hopefully creating something new in the process, but definitely you know, that was the fun part of it, was in a weird kind of way, because I've spent time and made a bunch of records. It was kind of like, how can we, you know, can we make this feel like the records that I used to like sneak out of the record collection?
Yeah. And Bill, the studio, how do you find the studio? Do you enjoy, is that a process you like going through recording and being teamed up with Joel, to who's, you know, not only a well-known musician, but a well-known producer as well?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, it was interesting in both a creative and in almost like a technical sense, you know. I mean, the process was, okay, what's our mic setup going to be? What do these instruments sound like on these particular mics and all of that? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I have no technical knowledge about it, but Joel and Thomas, your studio engineer, does, you know. So there was some experimentation about actually how we were going to do the recording, you know. And then there was the question of, well, what are we going to do? You know, and like figuring out the structure of songs and making some choices about what would be on it, how the stuff that I can bring to it would kind of relate to the stuff that Joel was bringing, you know, that kind of thing.
One of my
and then sort of playing it, trying some things, listening back to it, and changing course a few times.
And like some happy accidents too. I mean, that's what's fun about the studio is you don't know. I sometimes find you're trying to get something, you're not, and then you go, let's just try a different tune or let's set it up entirely differently. And you almost think you're just like you're winging it, or you're not even committing. And then you realize you're so much closer than you were a day the day before, you know. And so I mean, when we set up at one point and did this Help Me Somebody Depression Blues, right, a song of dad's, which was one of the last ones that kind of came to the record from this cassette tape that I had heard when I was a kid of a bunch of dad's tunes from like the 70s or the 80s. He'd recorded a bunch of the songs that appear on the record were on this cassette that were just rough sort of him and a guitar versions. And so I'd kind of go back to that cassette as a reference point for, hey, what songs of dad's could sort of fit into this world of the two of us. And that one I kind of said, what about that song? And we set up with me on drums, and I'm just sort of singing in the air in the background, and dad, we ran his guitar, his acoustic, into an amp and just pinned the tape machine sort of by accident. And it turned out kind of really fuzzy and sort of and old sounding, by sort of like this happy accident of like, just let's get to it. It was a live take. And that was that.
Yeah, that's right. And that was also after having sat down together and gone through the lyrics and made some changes there,
right,
you know.
Right,
and so in a way, you know, I had the original song, but Joel contributed it to, you know, shifting a few things around, changing a line here and there and whatnot.
Right.
So it's still largely my song.
It's your song.
His influence as a kind of editor almost came into it, you know. So.
And was that always part of the plan to sort of go back to, you know, things like that tape and mine some of that stuff for this record?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it was the idea was to have a couple of traditional songs. Dad brought Jim Jones and this song called We Have Fed You All for 1,000 Years to the record. And then he's got like three originals or four originals years on there, like On Down the River, No Sight Compares, right. Help Me Somebody.
Yeah,
three of them. And I felt like it should be sort of that variety was going to, I mean, trying to figure out what songs, like sequencing a record for me, that was the hardest challenge of the album was trying to figure out how thematically and sequence wise it could work to go back and forth between us as singers. Like if we put all my songs back to back and then a bunch of his back to back, then it's not really, it's more like an A side B side thing, which didn't interest me. I wanted it to feel like it could go back and forth, but the songs aren't, you know, there's some shared themes and some things that connect, but how they connect and where they connect is sort of what it was the trick to try and make the record feel right. Mm-hmm. And that took a while. And kind of made, I mean, I don't know, I maybe overthought it, but I think we kind of unlocked the sequence.
Head scratching going.
Yeah. Kind of like, but everything's right. Except these two songs don't feel good back to back. What do I have to do? And then you like take the puzzle apart again. And,
yeah. Right.
I mean, everybody does it with albums, but I hadn't done it in a long time on a record that had two singers.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, two sort of narrators or whatever, you know, and so that was kind of fun and part of what was interesting about it.
Did you end up leaving anything on the cutting room floor? Nothing. Is there anything that didn't make the cut?
I'm trying to remember. Did we record anything? I mean, there's other versions of songs that didn't make it. There were a couple others. I think we might have. We started tackling. That Nils song. I wanted to try this acoustic version of
Bandito
a Nils
Calling.
Song called Bandito Calling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I really thought it was going to work. I think it could, but for some reason we couldn't get it to like, do you know that song? Do you know the Nils
at all?
No,
not at all.
The Nils were like an amazing punk rock band from Montreal, pop punk, like the early days of really influenced Thrush, Sherman and Sloan and the Doughboys who were from Montreal.
Yeah.
They were kind of contemporary to like the Replacements and Husker Du in the early mid 80s and made this record, one sort of record, I think one major label album in like 1987 in New York with Chris Spedding, I think, and called The Nils, self-titled, and there was a song on it called Bandito Calling. Really wicked tune and just like a fast sort of rockin' guitar song.
And we were gonna
slow it down and turn it into this sort of like weepy country tune or something. But there's a version of that somewhere on the cutting room floor. It didn't really coalesce enough to make it feel like it was working, but maybe that'll be on the next one.
Was there a lot of live like recording going on? I mean, when you're kind of talking about a duo, and especially, you know, this duo in particular playing off each other live, you were talking about some improv earlier and things like that. So was that something you set out to do from the outset, was sort of set up more live than not?
I'd say it's about a mix of half and half. The more sparse recordings are live off the floor. There's a song called Dragonfly.
Mm-hmm. The first track,
which is sort of a single take of me, and I built the bass and drums sort of around it afterwards.
Right.
And Dad added some things afterwards, but the take itself of the guitar and the vocal is a live take. So that's sometimes how I would try and do things, would be to build a structure and then drop a live performance on top of the structure that way.
Yeah.
And then there's some other stuff like Help Me Somebody, Depression Blues, which is just the two of us live off the floor at the same time.
We've decided to do
Jim Jones is a live take.
There was not a lot of forethought to that one. You know, we just sort of said, hey, let's do this. And we did it.
And Jim Jones was going to be just sort of like a demo of Jim Jones. And then it was like, that's a great version of it. Let's put that on the album.
Yeah. That's really great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe if it's okay, we'll go out on that one, on Jim Jones, because there's a lot to love about that. So, a traditional song.
Yeah. Right? A transportation ballad, right, Dad? Is that the.
A transportation ballad, yeah. You know,
I like that term.
British convicts going to Australia, you know, and this Jim Jones, I think, that from what I understand, was one of the first guys to kind of like escape from, get out of his chains, you know, and escape and become a bushranger. You know?
and write a, you know, a revenge song.
He was one of the first ones to be caught. He was free for about 3 years, and then they finally got him and shot him down with a bullet to the head. You know.
Violent.
some great history. Before we get to that song, I wanted to maybe finally touch on this sense of history, because, you know, folk is imbued with this sense of protest. And I wondered, when you were going in to make a record that kind of had that tradition in mind, it's, you know, I'm probably not the first to notice that it feels a little weird out there these days. So.
Yes.
Bringing themes like that to the songs in this day and age, was that an important thing to do?
Well, in a way, yeah. I mean, like Blank Check and Next Blue Sky both have that kind of theme to them. To some
we have
extent.
Fed You All. I mean, it's, and we have it's, Fed it's You an All, old which is that,
which
know?
Was an old
proletarian.
It was a you know, the Wobblies, the International Workers of the World. You know, like in the early 20th century. That was their song, We Have Fed You All for 1,000 Years, was a kind of a rallying cry. It was published in the Little Red Songbook and everything. And it was reactivated in the late 60s, early 70s by this duo from San Francisco called Prairie Fire. That's where I first heard it. The lyrics were written by an unknown proletarian. And there was a more folky tune to it that was written originally, but Prairie Fire changed the tune, and we use that tune because it's not just the words, it's the tune that we liked as well, you know.
I think too, with those themes, that the words into that song resonate, I think, today. I mean, I think sometimes when you start touching down in those themes, it's sort of. I kind of feel like you can't land there delicately, but you have to be a little delicate about it, because the world is kind of like, there's a lot of protest going on, rightfully so, as you should be, and when you name an album Solidarity, instantly it rings some bells, right? And so being mindful of that, it was kind of like writing around those themes, trying to sort of like find your place and raise your voice in a way. That's, I think, what it's about. Recognizing that, you know, in many respects, in my own life, I've had a very lucky ride playing music and living in a little bit of a like bubble of a Halifax that's been supportive, playing music, all these things, and so for me to protest is kind of, you know, it feels important to show solidarity and to voice and bring some of that language to it, but also being mindful of where I am in the world. So some of the things that we were trying to sort of write about doesn't necessarily directly isn't necessarily my own experience, mm-hmm. but it impacts the world that we all live in. And so I think it's important to kind of like shine a light on it. That's what we're trying to do, at least a little bit. I don't know if did I say that appropriately, kind of.
Yeah.
It's one of those, because I think that there's, and meanwhile, the whole election was going on in the background of us record. It was just, it's hard to avoid it, right? And so it creeps into the writing and the choice of songs, and it feels really, really good to be like playing music and singing together. In the, especially for Dad and I think right now, you know.
I think We Are Federal is the one to play.
Yeah, I think I was just going to.
Having said all of
right. Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely.
Well, I can't thank you both enough for coming in to speak with me tonight, and thanks for being here. I really it's worth noting that we were speaking earlier, and you were talking about kind of going to the press junket and doing all the big deal press stuff, but I always appreciate when you take the time to come to a place like CKDU.
This room is like a memory tank. We used to do all-nighters here in like 1988, you know, in 1889, like when we were in junior high and high school, we'd come down here and hang out. It's awesome. It looks the same. It looks the same. Yeah, I love it.
You too can come and participate at CKDU. Yes, thank you very much for coming. The album is called Solidarity, Bill and Joel Plaskett. We're joining me here in studio at CKDU 88.1 FM. Here's a track from their new record called We Have Fed You All for 1,000 Years.
Factories where we spin, and if blood be the price of your cursed wealth, then we have paid it in. We have fed you all for 1,000 years, for that was our doom. A week ago, you have taken our lives from our children and wives, and we're told it's your legal share. But if blood be the price of all your wealth, good God, we have bought it fair. There is never a mind blown skyward now, but we're buried alive. Never a wreck drift shoreward now, but we are its ghastly crew. Go reckon our dead by your forges red, and the factories where we spin. But if blood be the price of all your wealth, then we have paid.
It's a song from the album Solidarity called We Have Fed You All for 1,000 Years. Great big thank you to Bill and Joel Plaskett for stopping by the station tonight. And don't forget, it is our what we're calling sustainer drive right now. So we encourage you to become a CKDU sustainer, meaning you can donate to the station on a monthly basis as opposed to an annual basis. Makes it a little bit easier. You don't even notice, man. Like, it's going to come off your credit card. You're not even going to notice. And you're going to feel good when you do notice that it's on your credit card statement at the end of the month. Donate right now at ckdu.ca. We're going to move over and make way for Don Adams and the Mojo Box. Then we got Deep Cuts Are the Deepest and the Dum Dums Radio Hour coming up on Super Tuesday programming. Tomorrow is International Women's Day. Going to leave you with a bit of a track from one of the most badass women in the Halifax music scene. Her name is Jen Grant. She has a brand new album called Paradise. This is the title track. Take care of one another. We'll see you on the flip side next week. Jen Grant on the way home. Save some.